Hare Krishna, everyone. A very warm welcome back to our ongoing series on the glories of our most beloved Sri Vrindavan Dham. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pashtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamaniti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pastacha Deshatarane. All glories to Sridhar Prabhupada, the revealer of the Dham. So, today we are continuing with our mini-series on stimulation for ecstatic love based on Sridhar Prabhupada's Nectar of Devotion, again, chapter 26. And this will be part 8. We have been discussing different articles or paraphernalia of Krishna. Upon seeing or hearing about or even simply touching, I was reading, help to awaken love for the Lord within the heart of a devotee. We gave the example in one of our first lectures in the series of a mother who, upon being separated from her small daughter, immediately remembers her upon seeing her daughter's little shoe somewhere. A transcendental example is kindly given by Srila Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, wherein he writes, quote, in the Kaishora age, beginning from the 11th year and continuing up to the end of the 15th year, Krishna's arms, legs, and thighs become marked with three divisional lines. At that time, Krishna's chest challenged a hill of Marakata jewels. His arms challenged pillars of Indranila jewels. The three lines of his waist challenged the waves of the river Jamuna, and his thighs challenged beautiful bananas. One gopi said, with all these exquisite features of his body, Krishna is too extraordinarily beautiful, and therefore I am always thinking of him to protect me, because he is the killer of all demons. So here I would like to mention again, as I have many times, how indebted we are to both Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Prabhupada for giving us Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and Nectar of Devotion, respectively. Sri Bhana Das writes in his work Kadambari in the Mangalacharna to that book, verse 7, he writes, it's really nice, fine literature is not appreciated by a wicked mortal, much like nectar does not go down Rahu's throat, whereas such literature is treasured in the heart of a good soul, much like Hari's chest bears the splendid Kastuba jewel. Now, Bhana, actually his full name was Bhanabhata, he was a 7th century Sanskrit prose writer and a poet. And his works are well-read and famous even today. In fact, I was reading many scholars describe him as Bhanochistam Jagat Sarvam. A nice title. Bhanochistam Jagat Sarvam. It means Bhana has described everything in this world and nothing is left. We told it all. So, in previous classes, we discussed how blankets are very much involved in Krishna's pastimes and thus help to stimulate our love for Krishna. There's a saying that the Lord accepts ordinary things and makes them extraordinary. An example is given. He accepts the feather of a peacock, which is, you know, commonly found on the ground here in Vrindavan, and he takes it and places it on his forehead. Or he holds a flute of bamboo, which, you know, grows in the forest. Similarly, the acharyas say that he accepts even the simplest of people who approach him for service and transforms them into transcendental devotees who themselves become capable of fulfilling others' spiritual desires, just like a kalpa viksha tree. So the articles we mentioned, like, you know, the peacock feather and the bamboo flute are simple objects, but they are divine, being related to the Lord. And the same is true with the Lord's blanket. This we have been discussing for two lectures now. But my dear Prabhus, we're not finished. Today we will discuss more about Krishna's precious blanket, in the hopes that, again, such a discussion will help awaken love for Krishna. And that love is already there. It's hidden within our hearts. That's described by Kaviraj Goswami in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Leela, chapter 22, verse 107, very famous verse. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadya Kabu Nai Shravanade Shuddha Chitte Kariye Udhai. Quote, pure love for Krishna is eternally established in the hearts of living entities. It is not something to be gained from another source. When the heart is purified by hearing and chanting, this love naturally awakens. So that's what we're doing here. We're hearing and chanting. Now, the poet Surdas reveals his sentiments about Krishna's blanket in one of his poems that he really dedicates to Sri Radha. He really dedicates, you'll see, he really dedicates this poem to Sri Radha. He writes, O friend, look, Sri Radha is the daughter of King Brishabhanu, and her lover is a simple cowherd boy. Sri Radha sits on the throne, and her beloved sits on the stem of a tree. Sri Radha wears a golden shawl, and Krishna wears a dark blanket. Surdas says, O friend, there is no good quality in your Krishna. It's only because of the loving glances of our queen Radha that everyone treats him with respect. Hare Krishna. So therein we hear how Krishna wore, or eternally wears, a dark blanket. It's interesting to note that now, here in Vrindavan, I often see deities, yesterday I was at the Radharaman temple, a couple of weeks ago I was at Radhabalava temple, and both times those deities were wearing dark colored blankets, because it's winter here now. And when I looked more into the matter, I discovered that such blankets that they offer to the Lord are made fragrant before offering with perfumed oils, and are placed near coal heaters to warm them before being offered to the Lord and placed on his body. Such a blanket is called balaposh, B-A-L-A-P-O-S-H, balaposh. And furthermore, the blanket, it's described in Shastra that it's light like a feather, warm like a mother's lap, fragrant like flowers, and soft like the tender touch of a newborn baby. The blanket, the deities wear the blanket. Light like a feather, warm like a mother's lap, fragrant like flowers, and soft like the tender touch of a newborn baby. It's deity worship. A side note is that the sadhus here in Braj, they wear blankets called loi. Loi, L-O-I. It's also a dark-colored blanket. It's dark-colored, and it's like very heavy, heavy wool. And centuries ago, these type of blankets were worn by the Brajabasis, like everyone would wear them in those days. And they were sold in a particular marketplace. So much so that marketplace became known as Loi Bazaar. And most ISKCON devotees are well aware of Loi Bazaar these days, which that bazaar specializes in many devotional items. Everyone, ISKCON devotees, they come from the West and they go to Loy Bazaar to buy dhotis and chadars and saris, etc. In my research for this lecture, I discovered that an old tradition in Braj was that if a king or a highly esteemed person would visit a temple in Vrindavan for darshan, the pujari would offer him the maha garland of the deities, maha prasad from the deities, and in special occasions also a blanket, or the blanket, that the Lord was wearing around his shoulder or around his neck. Now in present day, the culture of giving a maha garland and maha prasad is still there, but giving a blanket to esteemed persons has now changed to offering like a small scarf. You know, they have some scarves nearby and they touch it to the feet of the deity and they give it to the esteemed person. Just something like this, about that big, not very big. So times have changed. So now I'd like to share another of Krishna's pastimes that involved his precious dark blanket. This pastime is related by the great devotee Srila Narahari Chakravarti Thakur. Srila Narahari Chakravarti Thakur. In his famous book, Bhakti Ratnakara, it's in the fifth wave, in a section entitled Mathur Mandala Parikrama. Actually, for my lectures, I get a lot of leelas from that book, from that section. So you could say this pastime is one version of the famous pastime of Krishna becoming a boatman and taking Sri Radha and her gopi friends on a boat ride on the Manasi Ganga Lake, which we know is at Govardhan Hill. It's one version, just like in the Dhankeli, the pastimes where Krishna, you know, taxes the gopis here and there, different times, different places in Vrindavan. There's slightly different versions. So this is a very nice version of this particular pastime. Now, Manasi Ganga, the history of that sacred lake is very interesting. Once, upon hearing the glories of Mother Ganges, Nanda Maharaj, Mother Yasoda, and so many other gopas and gopis, they took Krishna on a journey to the Himalayan mountains to take bath, because they heard how auspicious it was to take bath in the Ganga. On the way, they rested for a little while, and at that point, Krishna questioned the need for all of them to travel so far, telling them that, and this is one of my favorite statements, we have favorite verses, this is a famous statement, all holy places reside in Braj. All holy places reside in Braj. This is one of the beautiful features of Vrindavan. Whatever holy places we see in India and throughout the universe and throughout the cosmos, you can find the original place here in Vrindavan. So at this particular point, you know, Krishna stopped everybody and said, first of all, he thought of Ganga Devi. And at once, just by thinking of Ganga Devi, her strong current brought her to that spot where he was standing. And at the head of this current was Ganga Devi herself. As we know, she rides an alligator, so she was mounted on an alligator. And this darshan of Ganga astonished Nanda and Yashoda and all the gopis and gopas. So at that point, Krishna said, "My dear friends, all holy places exist in Braj. You want to take bath in the Ganga, so Ganga Devi has personally appeared before you here today in Vrindavan. Please bathe in her waters without delay." So it appears they weren't very far. They're just on the frontier of Vrindavan. Krishna didn't want to leave Vrindavan. So Ganga came. So in this way, Manasi Ganga appeared in Vrindavan. And we see her when we go on Govardhan Parikrama, like halfway. Halfway, she's right there at halfway. That's where the Haridev temple is, actually. So she's called Manasi Ganga because she appeared from the mind or the thoughts of Krishna. Manasi means mind. So some here in Vrindavan, some address her as a river, while others address her as a lake. Now, the currents of Manasi Ganga, I was reading, they flow so swiftly through Govardhan Hill that its powerful waves, or her powerful waves, move even the boulders that line its shores, her shores. So a boatman must be very expert in plying his boat across the lake, especially in the rainy season when thunderstorms often appear. Not an easy thing when the wind comes up and the waves are there for a boatman to cross Manasi Ganga. It's a real challenge. Her waves are so powerful, they move boulders of Govardhan Hill. So one day, Radharani and her gopis were carrying pots full of different milk preparations to offer to one of their favorite deities, Haridev. We told that pastime. But it happened to be on the opposite, he happened to be that day on the opposite side of Manasi Ganga. So they were thinking they would take a boat. But when they arrived on the banks of the lake, they were disappointed to find there were no boats at the dock. Actually, there was one old, very rickety boat at the far end of the dock. But there was no boatman in sight. Just the boat was there. All they actually saw was a large, like you could say, crumpled up blanket, you know, in one corner of the deck. So disappointed, the gopis were just about to return home when they heard this low, like moaning sound coming from the old boat, like it's described as if someone was stirring from a deep slumber. So Sri Radha ordered one of her maidservants. She said to her, "Dear one, find out where that noise is coming from." So that Brajagopi, very dutifully, she walked down the landing, stepped onto that old rickety boat, and very cautiously approached the blanket. Then from beneath the blanket came what sounded like heavy breathing. So the gopi hesitated for a moment, and she looked back towards Sri Radha, who encouraged her with the movement of her hand. So that young gopi took courage and pulled back that old dusty blanket. And there, lo and behold, lying on the boat's deck, was a young boatman who, from the sound of his snoring, appeared to be in a deep sleep. So this gopi, she turned back to her friends, and Sri Radha, and she said in a loud whisper, "It looks like a boatman, but he's asleep." So hearing this, Sri Radha herself walked down the pier, and she stood directly over the boat. Then Sri Radha, she cleared her voice and she called out loudly, "Boatman! Boatman!" But he didn't seem to hear. So she called out again, but this time louder, and it's described very beautifully, accompanied by a chorus of her amused girlfriends. Accompanied by a chorus of her amused girlfriends. So finally, the boatman, you know, he stirred a little bit and then he like turned over and then he sat up rubbing his eyes. And they could see that he was a young man, he was dressed in, you know, simple clothes. He had a dhoti and like a sash, and he was actually wearing a cloak with his hair tucked under a well-worn turban. But she wrote and noticed immediately that he must have been new, you can say new to his profession, because his hands and feet looked very soft and they had no calluses. What kind of boatman is that, is rowing all day, has no calluses? So she noticed this. So the boatman, you know, he pulled his blanket off and he sat up and he called out, "It's been a long day and I'm resting. Please get yourself another boat. If you're looking for a boat, it's not going to be this boat. Or you come back tomorrow." And with that, he laid back down. And he pulled his blanket back over him. So at that point, Sri Radha signaled her maidservant to pull the blanket away. Now, Lalita Devi, who was always there to serve Sri Radha, Lalita's her favorite gopi, and Lalita gets angry sometimes when Krishna mistreats Radha. Lalita, who was nearby, said, "Hey, wake up, boatman. The queen of Vrindavan wants to cross the river to worship Haridev. Do not delay. Take your oar and ferry us to the far shore. You will be handsomely rewarded, not to mention the fact that you will have the privilege to serve the most chaste and pious girl of Braj." Of course, meaning Sri Radha. So the boatman, you know, he finally sat up again, and after much discussion, it's described, he reached an agreement with Lalita that his payment for transporting the gopis would be what? The remnants of Haridev's, the prasad they served him, the milk products. As payment, he would get yogurt and butter and kheer and, you know, everything they had in their pots. But as the gopis began to board the boat, the boatman started insisting that it would be safer if they went in two trips. In other words, he took one group of gopis over, came back and took another group of gopis over, because he felt the boat was a little small for everybody. But Sri Radha would hear nothing of it, because she doesn't want to be separated from her gopis and they don't want to be separated from her. So the boatman pushed off from the shore, and they noticed that while he was pushing off from the shore, he was smiling, and he was singing a song about boating on a lake with one's sweetheart. They're looking at him. He's singing a song about boating on a lake with one's sweetheart. So everything went well, you know, for some time. They were making good time across the lake. But about a third of the way, the boatman stopped rowing. He tilted his turban back on his head, and he sat down looking out at the river. So all the gopis, they were surprised. They're all looking at one another like, "What's happening?" So Sri Radha asked one of the gopis to ask the boatman the following. "Oh, boatman, why have you stopped?" To which came the reply from the boatman, "Dear Brajagopi, I'm tired and hungry. You all woke me up after a hard day's work, but before I could have my supper, you told me to leave. Plus, you have filled this boat to twice its capacity, and you insisted that I race to the other side. Neither could I have my supper, and neither did you follow my advice that, you know, we shouldn't all pile in this boat. Now, without eating, I cannot exert myself any further." So at first the gopis, they tried to convince the boatman to continue rowing. Then they actually threatened him. But apparently neither tactic worked. So they gave up, and they gave him access to their pots. That's how it's described. The author, access to their pots. But he shocked them when he devoured everything in the pots. And then he declared, "Oh, following such a feast, I must take a short nap." Then, stretching himself out on the floor of the boat, he again covered himself with his blanket and said, "If two of you girls massage my feet and another two my arms, I should resume my rowing much sooner. I could do it much sooner." So then Lalita, she threatened, "Boatman, unless you start to row right now, we will hold you by your hands and feet and toss you overboard into the lake. Now get up." So with that, the boatman, you know, reluctantly resumed his service. Not so reluctantly, we understand, but he appeared to be reluctant, resuming his service. "And not a moment too soon," I was reading, "for storm clouds began, gathering overhead. And before long, it said a strong wind appeared, like gale force, hurricane wind, along with thunder and lightning, causing the lake, the water in the lake to rise. And soon water began to seep into the boat." So shaking his head, the boatman called out over that strong wind, "See, girls, I warned you. I warned all of you together. We'd be too heavy a load for this boat. See what's happening? Now look, because it's so heavy and the waves are so strong, my boat is taking on water. So unless you lighten the load here by disposing some precious weight overboard, surely we will sink." So cursing their fate, the gopis had no other choice than to throw their pots overboard. Now, let me tell you that these pots were pure gold. So they're precious and they're heavy. So they had to throw their golden pots overboard. But even as these Brajagopis watched their precious pots disappear into the depths of the river, the boatman called out again, saying, "Ladies, the boat is still taking on water. Now you have to discard your heavy jewelry." Because gopis were wearing bangles and earrings and nose rings and all sorts of necklaces, you know, fine jewelry, heavy. But the girls, they answered in a chorus, again saying, "Never, never." But I was reading as their skirt hems started to soak up the rising water. They reluctantly tossed their necklaces, bracelets, and nose rings, and everything into the lake's swelling waves, it's described. But the water in the boat kept rising. So the boatman said, "Ladies, the only way we can keep this boat from sinking is if you bail out the water yourselves. If you bail out the water yourselves." To which the gopis answered very angrily, "We could have done that with the pots you made us throw overboard. We could have done it, but you made us throw the pots overboard, so now what?" And then, as the strong winds continued, you know, whipping the lake into a fury, the gopis just sat there, drenched in water up to their waists. Up to their waists. Critical scene here. All Purnamasi's Yogamaya's arrangement. So at this point, it's described Sri Radha began feeling extremely guilty at risking her girlfriend's lives. But the author says, not to mention being distressed at the thought of never seeing Krishna again. We should also think like that. Not to mention being distressed at the thought of never seeing Krishna again. So having no other recourse, Sri Radha, she stood up and she raised her arms and she called out to the boatman, Boatman, please save us. And she just threw her arms around him, like in desperation. Save us. She threw her arms around him. Now it's described at that instant, a flash of lightning struck her. When I read that, I couldn't, like, what? As soon as she embraced the boatman, a flash of lightning struck her. But, Prabhus, the lightning flash didn't come from the clouds above. Rather, it came from the body of the boatman, who, pleasantly surprised, pulled Sri Radha even closer to him. Now, the effect of the boatman's touch at once revealed his real identity to Sri Radha. She knew who this was, but the gopis, who had never seen Sri Radha even so much as look at another man other than Krishna, they were shocked. They were shocked. And they cried out over this howling wind. All together, another chorus. Lord Shiva, save us. Just as we were about to sink to our watery graves in this lake, chaste Sri Radha tosses us into an ocean of embarrassment. Sri Radha tosses us into an ocean of embarrassment by embracing a low-born boatman. So rather than, saying something, explaining everything to defend herself, Sri Radha reached behind the boatman and from his cloak pulled out, what? A bamboo flute. Much like a magician could pull a rabbit out of a hat. And as Radha held up this famous flute, Venu, the thunder and lightning stopped. The winds died down. The clouds dispersed. The waters receded, and the gopis' faces lit up with smiles. Oh, they cried, it's him! It's Krishna. Oh, they cried, it's him! Then Krishna, described as pleased with himself as an actor receiving a standing ovation, bowed his head towards the gopis and pulled Sri Radha even closer as she struggled to get free from his grasp. Now, the author says the gopis were terribly frightened by this ordeal, and they were still drenched from head to toe. But seeing Krishna standing before them made all the torment worthwhile. That's the word he used. All the torment worthwhile. Now, our author, Srila Narahari Chakravarti Thakur, he says, and I'll quote him here, They were, after all, loving puppets in the hands of the Supreme Puppet Master, who pulls strings of love at will, uniting him and his eternal companions upon the stage of his Braja Leela. I'll recite it again. They were, after all, loving puppets in the hands of the Supreme Puppet Master, who pulls strings of love at will, uniting him and his eternal companions upon the stage of his Braja Leela. Then it's described that, he describes that beneath a silvery moon, Krishna steered the boat towards the nearest island, where he and the gopis changed into dry clothes while joking about the highlights of their adventure. And then once again they boarded the boat, which had, like Krishna, listen to this, cast off its disguise to reveal a golden, jewel-studded luxury craft. The boat had cast off its disguise to reveal a golden, jewel-studded luxury craft, equipped with all necessary things to serve the divine couple, Radhesham. Then as Radha and Krishna reclined on a comfortable couch, some gopis sang, others, they played musical instruments, and a few others steered the boat. They steered the boat through the calm, lotus-filled waters of Manasi Ganga. Hare Krishna. Pure nectar. Shri Brajubhumi Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki. Let us never forget that is the goal of all our practices in Krishna consciousness. So Prabhus, this concludes our lectures on Lord Krishna's blanket as a means to awaken our love for him and his divine consort, Srimati Radharani. Next week, we'll be speaking on sandalwood. So many articles in Vrindavan can bring forth that loving mood. So while going to research, I found a few things and about sandalwood, and we'll discuss the use of sandalwood in the pastimes of Radha and Krishna as another stimulus for awakening ecstatic love. Now, in preparation for that, I mean like the mood that will accompany that mini-series, we'll conclude today with a verse from Hari Bhakti Vilas, 11th Vilas, text 25 to 31. This will prepare us. Quote, "One should meditate on Krishna as he sits on a lotus throne in a very relaxed manner. The throne is placed in the shade of a desire tree that is situated on a beautiful riverbank and surrounded by lakes filled with lotuses and water lilies. The riverbank is situated at the foot of a golden mountain that is decorated with various minerals, chirping birds, and wish-fulfilling trees. Lord Krishna is decorated with a pearl necklace and a flower garland. The throne is covered with gold and bedecked with jewels, and covered by a colorful canopy. After fixing one's mind on the Lord in this manner, a devotee should worship him with offerings of jati flowers. Then one should offer food to the Lord and his cowherd boyfriends on silver plates. In this way, self-controlled devotees should meditate on Lord Krishna as he is comfortably seated along with all his cowherd friends." Beautiful meditation to prepare us for next Friday. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much. A goodbye from Sri Vrindavan Dham, and we'll look forward to seeing you in a week's time. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Shishi Gauranitai ki, Shishi Krishna Balaram ki, Shishi Radha Shama Sundar ki, Vrindavaneshwari Srimati Radharani ki, Mayapur Dham ki, Shishi Gauranitai ki, Shri Krishna Sankirtan Yajna ki, Nitai Gaur Premanandi, Jai Jai Sisi Radhe Sham.